Hello and welcome to episode 201 of Checkpoint Chat. I gotta get used to the 200 now. My name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined, as always, by Matthew Figuera.
Yeah, yeah, literally one job.
I've spent literally probably like the good part of 2.5 years going 100 and something.
Yeah. Like,
my body is just, it wasn't ready. It wasn't
it's
ready.
It's just amazing how it's just that one. You're like, oh, damn it. We're not even going to restart. We're just going to run with this.
No, it's I mean, this is how it goes here. I'm not going to restart just because of that, please. Well, this 201 is content.
201.
201.
Clean video interface. No more birthday shenanigans.
God damn
it. I had a lot
it.
Of fun with that, though.
Now, because you've done that, you've got to pick a theme every week. Every episode's just, by the end of it, it's got to be a mess of something. Like, one week can be Nemesis from Resident Evil, just different Nemesis photos, like Nemesis with a bazooka, Nemesis with in a bikini, you know.
I mean, that could be arranged. Don't give me ideas. I'll do it.
You're going to have to dive deep into some corners of the internet to find Nemesis in a bikini. I'll tell you that much.
Nemesis in a bikini images.
That just reminds me of I think they're still making it. The Dead by Daylight is making like a dating sim with all the like killers in it, which is so ridiculous and amazing. See like Freddy Krueger in a bathing suit or something, you know, real funny.
So not great for audio listeners, but then, you know, if you're not watching the video, that's fine. You just need to imagine that I'm now about to throw up. It's not Nemesis in a bikini, but it's definitely a festive looking Nemesis. I wouldn't be surprised if I went to like a
what Mexican, is happening when they never where's that from?
Fiesta, and here he is like, olé.
What game is that from? That's such a strange Nemesis.
This is fan art, I think.
Okay. It's just Nemesis with lots of pink tendrils.
There we go. It's perfect.
Yeah. Imagine that as you will if you are an audio only listener at the moment. My goodness. But yeah, episode 201. Back on the regular schedule, despite ESCOM's best efforts.
Man, load shedding is hitting.
To be fair, if we were still on stage 4, this weekend wouldn't
happen.
It wouldn't have happened.
I think we would have just been like, you know, it's
not possible. Just, yeah. We got to 200. We're shutting down the podcast because of ESCOM, you know, like other businesses.
I can preemptively warn you now that if we have stage 3 or 4 next weekend, that I probably can't record because I'm very busy over the weekend for numerous reasons. So if I'm cut off both mornings.
And it seems if we're in stage 4, we alternate.
We
always on like alternating
That's
schedules.
The worst.
Yeah.
It's
so
the worst, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we managed it this weekend by the grace of the power gods that they put down the stage to stage 3.
By the skin of our teeth, actually.
But who knows? On a weekly basis, this is what it's going to be like. It's just going to be, you know, can we do it this week? Can we not do it this week? Who knows?
We should just flip a coin every week. Will it happen? Head says yes, tail says no. And then ESCOM flips the coin.
And I agree.
They rig it and it always lands on tails 9 out of 10 times.
I agree. It's been a weird week, I think. A long one, I think. When we were looking up news, there was stuff that happened on the Monday that I was just like, this happened this week? Like, feels like a month ago.
We're in that usual downward spiral that is the road to Christmas. Mm. Mariah Carey's ready, waiting in the wings to bust.
You're going to see that little...
Coming to a mall near you.
I always love that little meme where it's like the chart of her plays on Google and it's like, it just peaks up and it's like, it's time.
But I do love how every year I get older, I start to think that... and it's part my perception and part fact that retailers start to put up stuff earlier. It feels like every year.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
first of October. Today is the 1st of October. I would not be surprised if I hit a mall that at least one store is like, hey,
oh, it's Christmas. Absolutely. Like, you're gonna start seeing the...
It's 2.5 months away, nearly 3 months away.
Stop the little this. The little angel lights are going to come in. And I mean, it's the same with Easter. Easter, they start putting shit up like February. And you're like, what are you doing? We're not even in Lent, goddammit.
Step into a lift and Boney M is blaring. Like, oh
my goodness.
I can't believe this.
Oh my God. I'm actually quite excited though, because this year I'm going to be overseas for Christmas for the first time since like 2000. I think the last time I was away for Christmas was 2007. I was in Portugal visiting family.
Nice.
So yeah, we're going to be, Shani and I are going to be overseas for Christmas, and Europe kind of like goes all out for Christmas. So
they do.
Yeah. And she's never seen that. I mean, she doesn't really celebrate Christmas, but I think it will still be nice to see. It's still like festive, even if you're not into the whole, you know, religious aspect of it. The tradition is quite interesting to
see. Yeah, so. It's funny because obviously there's a religious aspect, but by celebrate Christmas, we mean there's just lights everywhere, Christmas trees, presents. Yeah. It's not actually religious.
Yeah, exactly. But unless you're going to like midnight mass on Christmas Day or something like that.
Oh, no. Yeah, I watched that show.
Oh, no.
It did not end well.
This is actually a Christmas story, yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I've only been overseas twice for Christmas, and the one time we were in Madeira, I think it was.
Oh, that must have been great.
I'm sure it was for the millennium. I think the year 2000, we were there for the new year. Yeah, it was a good time. You know, the world was going to end in the year 2000.
Oh, of course, Y2K, you know. All Y2K the computer systems are just going to collapse, yeah.
We'll go visit our homeland, we'll die here.
That's surrounded by breezer, it's okay.
And then, at Allah, I've been there 3 times. Yeah, I've been in Madeira 3 times for Christmas, and every time it was 2000, 2009, and then I think... When did I go with Lenska? It was 2018, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great time.
Oh, yeah, because that's where you got engaged. It was you were there over that time.
Yeah, and it's so nice. Everything's done up, all Christmassy. There's just like markets everywhere, like festive markets. It's very cool.
I can imagine, especially there on the island, because you can kind of, like when you go up into the mountains, you can see the whole island. You can see the whole of Funchal and stuff. Like it must look so incredible.
Well, what's quite nice is if you're not there for Christmas, be there for the new year when they do, it's like for animals, not good. Agreed.
Oh, all the fireworks.
All the fireworks. But it's quite something to watch, because you can go stand out on the pier and you're just turning your face to the island. And they do like synchronized fireworks like all around.
That's pretty sick.
That's really cool, yeah.
Sure. No, that's cool. When I was in Europe, it was also in Portugal, 2007, and Portugal goes all out for Christmas. The markets are like next level. And it's just got that vibe because it's like cold and snowy. And it was really nice.
Are you going to be there for the new year as well? Are you back by then?
Yeah. So we.
Nice.
No. I lied. I didn't realize this, but we actually flying on New Year.
But
and I've done this before and it was stupid. Yeah, that's exactly why it was. I've done it before. I can't remember why.
Are you going to be up in the air when
I think
when
it was actually,
midnight?
Yeah, when we were coming back from Portugal last time, we flew on the 31st and we land here on the 1st. So at some point
I have
to
experience that at least once in my life, where you're on a plane and then do the air hostesses and stewards like hand out like party hats.
Well, so when I was last there, I was still a kid, but I remember staying up specifically to see what would happen. And they missed it by like an hour or like 2 hours or something. And then I think someone on the intercom was like,
oh, yeah,
passengers, it's New Year. Happy New Year. But I think everyone was sleeping, so they didn't want to wake everyone up. And then the air hostesses came down with like flutes of champagne. But it was like everyone was fucking sleeping. So it was just
amazing.
It was so late.
I like to imagine that the pilot comes on. You know, when a pilot talks, it's like,
he's like, it's New Year. Also, there's turbulence coming on. Please also, put on your seatbelts. Yeah.
Please buckle seatbelts. We are at 10,000 feet altitude. Happy New Year.
Yeah. 10, I'm going to do 9. A loop-de-loop for the New Year. Just buckle your seatbelts.
I'm going to tilt the plane right. So if you look down, we're flying over the Atlantic Ocean.
You can see some fireworks in the distance if you look out your window right now.
Oh, my God.
I actually didn't even think of that. We did it mainly because the flights were so much cheaper.
So like cheap, yeah. I think flying on any actual big holiday is.
And I mean, we aren't really big like New Year's celebrators anyway. So I was like, what are we going to do? Like party overseas? Like, nah, that's 100% not what we
would do. You and Sean, you can be those outliers that party on the plane.
Oh, hell yeah. We're just going to get crunk on the plane. Everyone's going to be fucking sleeping.
Take a Bluetooth speaker with you. play bang some Josh Frader.
Oh my God, on the plane. I'm sure people will love that. Super, super happy.
I'm hoping
the flight will be quite empty, so then we can just get like places to sleep, and then I'll have your champagne when they announce
you're
it.
You're so
if they even
old
it.
Now.
I know.
This is when you know you're old, when you're going to be up in the air for New Year, and your biggest hope is that there's a place for you to light up.
Listen, the flight is long. I need place to sleep.
Oh, my God. Life comes at you fast.
It does. When you hit 30,
where will you be when you have the realization that you want to have an empty plane to sleep instead of party?
On New Year's Day.
Oh, my God. That's great.
Let's check one chat to talk about New Year's and video games. God. Sure. New Year's so close. How did this happen?
That made me
So, I think... I think, you know, all the big marquee AAA titles are like slowly trickling out. We've already had FIFA come out later in October. Now we've got Call of Duty. Early in November, we've got God of War. So
God of Boy.
Yeah, God of Boy. I think we're going to be getting to those in due time. But for now, I am getting to backlog stuff, I guess. I guess let's start with one thing that is relatively new. Last weekend was the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Is it Modern Beta. Warfare 2 2? Because it's the second one.
It's Modern Warfare 2 20. No, it's just Call
2022.
Modern Warfare 2. That's it.
Okay. That's just Modern Warfare 2. Yeah. Okay. Well, there was a beta the prior weekend, and then last weekend there was the same beta. And it was basically open on all platforms. So I downloaded all 50 fucking gigs of that thing. yeah, my God. And then after having to restart it 3 times because it kept breaking on the brightness configuration screen. Like, it let me go up but not down, which was real dumb. So eventually I just had to resign myself to it not being correct. Got to play some games. I never played. They had, I think, part of the last weekend's test was a big test for a new mode called, I think it's called Invasion.
Groundwork?
Is it Ground War?
Is it basically Battlefield?
Yeah, it's like a lot of people and vehicles. Yeah, so it was that. I didn't play that because I don't give a shit about that. Like, I come to Call of Duty to play the fast-paced 6v6 maps, and I played some of those, and it's pretty good. I quite like it. The time to kill is crazy low.
Super short.
Holy shit. Like, I was shocked that when I first died, I was like, that was fast. And then when I killed someone, I was like, oh, okay.
That is even faster.
I mean, it's amazing. It's not Counter-Strike levels. I don't think many shooters get to that. But it certainly feels distinctly a lot quicker than previous Call of Duty games. Like, gone are the days where you can, like, pummel, like, an enemy with half your magazine, he runs around the corner and he's still alive. Like, nah.
Yeah.
This was like 5-6 bullets gone, like game over. Sure. So I prefer that. Like, when I actually played the original Modern Warfare 2 back in the day, I played actually quite a bit of that multiplayer.
Mm.
And I used to play on hardcore mode a lot because I preferred the much lower time to kill.
I remember playing in hardcore mode as well.
Yeah, it suits my sensibilities a lot more. So yeah, I was quite into it. definitely feels like a Call of Duty. You've got your kill streaks, you've got, you know, your weapons that you upgrade and whatever. And I didn't play enough to kind of get a sense of the flow of, you know, weapon upgrades and character upgrades. Mm. I just kind of played, and I was playing in quick play, so I was playing a variety of modes. But it was cool. The weapons that were on offer at the default level felt nice. The audio sounds really good, as always. I think Call of Duty's hallmark is like these things just sound great.
That sounds
I have seen the developer Infinity Ward is taking some feedback on like the volume of footsteps and stuff. Apparently some players were like they're way too low.
Too loud.
So yeah, there's some tweaking going on, but I definitely want to give this more of a go when it comes out. I think the remake of Modern Warfare, that was the last time I got super into Call of Duty's multiplayer. And I think that was the last campaign I actually really enjoyed. Cold War was fun. I think Vanguard was not great. So yeah, I'm keen to play more of this when it launches. I think it's on the 26th of October.
It's soon.
Yeah, so it's very soon.
I was going to touch on the Battlefield mode, which I'm going to call it from now on, because I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it a few years ago where Activision were like, we don't believe in, you know, like we're not about that vibe. We don't care for large-scale combat and whatever.
That,
and
that sounds granted, about right.
I don't think the new mode is, you know, 32 versus 32 or 64 versus 64. But I watched footage this week and I was like, this is hilarious how it feels like Battlefield. Like you spawn, climb into vehicles, you yeet off, you have to capture points. I'm like, that's Battlefield. That is Battlefield.
That's straight up Battlefield.
Am I mad?
Yeah.
This is literally Battlefield. But you know what? That's not a bad thing. I think, like I always take my hats off to Call of Duty that the games always look good. I don't know. I feel that the games don't get enough praise for looking good. It's like people will be like, yeah, it looks good and move on. But like the fact that these games look as good as they do and they run as good as they do always, like there's never, performance is never an issue. I don't know if I've ever seen or encountered stuff myself where I'm like, oh my God, I had lag or whatever. It's always super optimized. Having that for someone like me is someone who really enjoys Battlefield. Like I'd be very keen to try, you know, the more vehicle combat stuff with more long range shenanigans.
And it's also because like the format is the same, but Battlefield and Call of Duty, their shooting feel is completely different.
It's completely different.
So I'm with you that like I think I might, I mean in a way this is why Warzone felt really good to me, was like it was a battle royale with a sort of style of shooting that I'm quite familiar with and that I quite enjoy. So it felt a lot easier to get into than say like a Battlegrounds or Fortnite or even Apex, as well. So yeah, I'm quite keen on it. Keen to see what the campaign's all about. Because the previous Modern Warfare reboot's campaign was pretty great. I thought even and kind of like. At the end, just reintroduce the villain that was the villain in the first Modern Warfare back in the day. So I don't know if they're just going to retread old ground. I'm just like, you know. Like,
I hate this timeline so much.
Yeah, it's so stupid. I'm very happy to get good old Soap back because I think that is such a stupid name. It is just unbelievable that someone
Soap McTavish, how dare you? It's the best name.
I mean, even Captain Price even gives you shit for it in like the first 30 seconds of that game. He's like, what kind of name is Soap? Yeah, I agree with
him.
What kind
of fucking name is Mr. Soap? Price.
Yeah, I guess so. But that's his surname. Soap is the dude's first name. That's nonsense.
The first name, yeah.
Imagine mother just like, what are you going to name your son? Soap. The nurse is like, are you asking for soap? Or like,
excuse me, what? Maybe Soap is just a product of a mistake.
Soap is definitely a product, yeah.
Get out of here. But yes, cool. I'm also very keen to try Modern Warfare 2.
He's a clean operator.
I hate that they called it Modern Warfare 2. They're like, just call it.
Yeah, it's nonsense.
I completely understand. Okay, you're rebooting it. But like Modern Warfare wasn't that long ago that, you know what I mean?
It really wasn't. Like
it was long ago, but it wasn't that long ago. I don't know.
It's 2009, so it was like 12 years ago. It's really not that long ago. Was SEO modern, existed then?
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4 only 2009?
No. Modern Warfare 2 was 2009. Because Modern Warfare, which was the big, what kicked all of this off, was 2007. Then but it even was
that,
World
even
at
that
War.
Doesn't feel that long ago.
No, it's not that long ago. I distinctly remember it. I was in grade 11, and I remember being super amped to go after school to go pick up Modern Warfare 2 on PC. I have a very strong recollection of that moment. And
today, you're looking forward to four open seats on planes.
Exactly. Now I'm 30. Fuck my life.
I'm going to give you shit for that, but I'm with you. I love open seats.
It's so good. So good.
Oh, my God. Okay. Modern Warfare 2.
Good. Yeah, Modern Warfare 2 beta. Seems fun. Other than that, because of the deluge of Yakuza games that were announced during the Tokyo Game Show, I think it was, firstly, they've moved over to calling them Like a Dragon, because that's actually what they're called in Japan.
Yeah. I love that we just got given Yakuza.
Yeah, I mean, the studio's name, RGG, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's what it is. It's Like a Dragon.
Like a Dragon.
Studios, yeah.
Hilarious.
So we got Yakuza 8 last time, which was called Yakuza 8 : Like a Dragon, which is fucking confusing. Now they are just called Yakuza. Well, they're called Like a Dragon and then the subtitle. So they're not called Yakuza anymore.
Okay.
So we've got like a Dragon Ishin, and then we've got Like a Dragon 9 or 8. Maybe it is 8. I don't know. And then they're remaking. Ishin they're remaking. And then there's a new sub-story for that's set between Yakuza 4 and 5. So there's a bunch of stuff coming.
Yeah.
And again, Twitter is all abuzz with people being this series is phenomenal. You know, people should play it, blah, blah, blah. And listen, I've tried.
You've tried.
Jeff and Darren have sung the praises of the series, and I've given Yakuza 0, which is what many people consider the best one, a go twice, and bounced off of it both times. And I don't know if it's bouncing off of it because I'm reviewing stuff or whatever, but I remember both times I was I'm just not finding this engaging.
Yeah.
So I thought, let me give it one more go. So I restarted the fucking game again.
Oh my God.
Which is probably not the best way to give a game a go again when you're playing through the opening for the third fucking time. Especially because it's super long. I'm now 10 hours in and I'm digging it. I'm not at the point where I'm this is some of the best things I've ever played in my life, but I'm I kind of want to continue playing this. You know, yeah. I want to see more of the story play out. So if you're unfamiliar, the Yakuza series, at least this portion of them, they are essentially narrative driven. They're not really JRPGs, but they're brawlers in a way.
Yeah.
There is a lot of talking, a lot of dialogue, a lot of story. It's very melodramatic, very soap opera vibes, but also at the same time, quite poignant and touching at times, very good and very completely over the top nonsense. It is completely aware of how ridiculous it is at times.
Yeah.
But when you're actually playing, you're exploring an open world. You're exploring a city called Kamurocho, which is apparently used in every single game after this. And you're completing small side quests here and there. You're completing normal quests. And as you're running around, you bump into people who just want to fight you, other Yakuza, other delinquents, stuff like that. and the fighting is quite fun. You get access to three fighting styles pretty quickly at the start of the game, and they're all quite distinct. Brawler is slow, but very, very powerful. And you can break enemies' guards. Then you've got Rush, which is very fast, and you've got a dodge, but you've got to string together a lot of attacks to stun an enemy. Then you've got, what's the third one? Beast. Beast is if there is a weapon within range of you when you press attack, you will automatically grab it and use that to attack. So amazing. It's very wild and reckless style of fighting. And you can switch between them at any time during a fight, which is quite nice. And you upgrade them all independently, and they've all got their own like techniques and methods to kind of learn. And you've got to figure out which enemies are easier to take down with which style. That's really fun. I'm quite enjoying that. I think the thing that didn't grab me first was the story, because I think it does take a while to get its wheels like spinning. I think we were talking about this last week, but like, we hate the idea of people saying, oh, you need to play this game for 10 hours before it gets good, because like, I totally understand people don't have that fucking time. Like,
yeah,
but I definitely feel now that I've got up to the certain point that I'm enjoying, like there's stuff that's happened in the story. So I say 10 hours, but I've only done 2 acts, and it was only at the end of the second act, I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And then something big happens in the third act, which kind of changes the whole dynamic of the game.
And then everything changed.
Literally, like, everything changed. And, like, I was, like, sort of expecting it, because I kind of knew it was coming, but it still caught me off guard in the way that it happened. It was pretty cool. I'll just say that a new character is introduced, and it's probably one of the most perfect introductions of a character I've ever seen, like, in a game. It's just, like,
phenomenal. Is it our patch, man?
Yes. Goro Majima. It's so good. It's like a 30-minute cutscene, but I was just, like, glued to it. I was just like, this is incredible.
I've never played a Yakuza game, but the two people I recognize is the main dude, whose name I do not actually know.
Kazuma Kiryu.
And our patch, man. I just know that those two are...
Goro Majima is like, I knew he was popping up, because everyone says like, oh, at a point like this turns into a game where you're playing as Majima actually. And I didn't expect it to be so soon, but boy, his intro is just chef's kiss.
I know Eyepatch Man is like equal parts bad guy and equal parts ally for some reason throughout the series. So
he's completely nonsense. That's the extent of my knowledge. He's so silly. I love him so much, like, already. And I've hardly even played with him, but just from his introduction, I was like, yeah, this character fucking rules. I love him. I'm quite enjoying it. There's a lot of, like, mini games that you can spend a lot of time playing. Like, you can go to bars and play, like, darts and pool. You can go to Sega arcades and play, like, claw machines or, like, old 2D Sega games. I've done some utterly ridiculous side missions. Like, I think I mentioned this on Discord, but there was one where I walked past a store and it just like stopped, and there was like a big line there, and Kiryu was like, why the hell is there this line? So you have to go and talk to people in the line, and you end up speaking to this kid who's like, oh, we're lining up to buy this video game. And Kiryu is like, lining up to buy a video game, what does the world come to? And then, so you kind of just leave it at that. And then when you come past the store again, you see the kid is like sad, and you find out that like a bully like stole the game from him.
Oh.
So it sets off the string of like tracking down the bully to like get the video game. And every time you find the bully, he's been bullied by another dude who stole the video game from him. So you keep going. And then eventually you get to the end where it's like this Yakuza boss who's like got this video game, and you're like, what the fuck is going on? And he's like, oh, I stole it for my son. And then this kid comes, he's like, dad. I'm like, oh my God, this is so stupid. I spent this whole time running around.
I know I will love these games, like, hands down. I live for shit like that, but my
nonsense.
Like, where do you even dip your toe? I suppose it's either Yakuza 0 or Like a Dragon.
Yakuza 0 is the one a lot of people say to start with, because they're like, you know, Like a Dragon is, you can start there, but it's firstly it's turn-based, so it's a completely different style of game, but also it feeds off the story from the previous Yakuzas, because Kiryu does come back. A lot of people I've seen, at least on Twitter, saying that Yakuza 0 is the best one to start with. It's good. There was another side mission where I had to help a band who had got a reputation for being like these like really hectic punks, like to the point where people thought they were murderers or something. I don't know. Really insane. But everyone in the band was actually like the sweetest person you could ever imagine. So they had to do an interview, and they come to Kiryu to like get help on how to answer these questions. It's really too good. It reminds me a lot, and maybe this is just because of the style of writing, but it reminds me a lot of Persona in a way, where the side quests in Persona are sort of like similar. They're like ridiculous and over the top and very shoved in your face. Like, we are trying to make this emotional, you know, like with the kid and the dad with the video game, like at the end of it, like he's like, oh, I realize now I'm a bad dad and this and this and that. And it's like, this is not subtle at all, but it's still kind of cool. Like, Persona is very much like that. And I think that's what's drawing me in, because that's what drew me into Persona a lot. And that's probably why I'll enjoy Like a Dragon, because the turn-based combat is very much like Persona. So, yeah, I don't know. It's cool. The story does take a very long time to, like, get going. But I'm feeling like it's there now, and I'm, like, kind of curious to see. Because there's, like, there's a central mystery that's happening, and I kind of thought it was just very basic, like, oh, this is people double-crossing me and framing me and whatever. But now something happened, I'm like, oh, okay, no, this is way more complex than I thought it was. So,
yeah.
It's a good time. I'm enjoying it. I'm chewing away at it. I think it's extremely long. If I'm not mistaken, when Jeff reviewed it back in the day, I think he said he played it for like 60 hours. And I'm like, I don't know if I have the patience for 60 hours. But 10 hours so far, it's pretty good.
It's a good time.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Whatever, it's on, man. It's on Game Pass.
You put nearly 100 hours into Elden Ring.
It's also true. It took me most of the year, though.
Yeah, but that is like 6 months worth. I don't know if it is still on Game Pass. Are the Yakuza games still on Game Pass?
I'm playing it on Xbox on Game Pass. Are you playing? I did not purchase it on...
There we go.
But I think I have it on PlayStation as well, if you ever want to play it. So.
Nice.
I have a disc. Cool. You have to use physical media.
But I've got Game Pass on PC, so...
I don't know if it's on PC. It might only be on console.
I can tell you right now. Yeah. Let's just do some actual gaming journalism over here.
They released a bunch. Oh no, they released the Lost Judgment ones on Steam recently. The Detective spin-off ones. Apparently those are very good. Darren raves about those frequently, so yeah.
Yakuza. Well, play with Game Pass. Oh my god, there's so much. There's the Yakuza Remastered Collection, Yakuza 0, Yakuza 3, Yakuza 4, Yakuza 5.
See, you have everything.
Yakuza 6.
You are just going to become a Yakuza streamer now.
Then what the hell is Yakuza Kiwami 2?
Yakuza Kiwami is a remake of Yakuza 1. Kiwami 2 is a remake of Yakuza 2.
Oh, okay, that's why they skip. They go Yakuza 0, 3, and then 1 and 2.
But apparently the Kiwamis are not great. I think they're remaking games with very old mechanics. Zero was made for the PS3 era as a prequel to 1 and 2. That's why it's called Yakuza Zero. Yeah. I mean, then, if you don't get that, that's a lot Zero of Yakuza, 1.
Damn.
Yeah, it's a lot. And they're all long games. They're not. But apparently they're very good. And apparently the story that culminates in Yakuza 6, I think it is very good. Like Kiryu's story is pretty well done.
Good lord. I'm getting served pop-ups from my Xbox Game Pass app.
Install Yakuza.
Good lord.
Speaking of Xbox Game Pass, I think you played a game off there.
I did.
You annihilated it. You finished it as well.
So I've been playing a little game called Metal Hellsinger, which I think it launched about a week or two ago.
It was in September for sure. It was
definitely a recent release, and so I saw what grabbed my interest about this game is that it looks very much like Doom for all intents and purposes, but the main hook is that it is a rhythm based shooter. I don't know if that's a genre or subgenre.
I think it's quickly becoming a genre. Because you've got games like this, you've got BPM, which is kind of the same thing.
And like to be perfectly honest, this is a sort of game I'd probably be interested in playing, but I don't know if I'd ever go out and buy it to play it. But the fact that it's on Game Pass is like, I'll give it a try. I played it. It's only to get to the, to roll credits is only 4 to 5 hours. So it's not a very long game, but replayability is incentivized for... a number of reasons, but let's just dial it back. So Metal Hellsinger sees you playing a character called the Unknown, as the demons refer to as the Unknown. She is a, I think, half human, half demon who has come to hell looking for her voice. It's gone.
Cool.
They took it from her. And
I'm pretty sure there are other places she could look first. But
I mean, you could have, but that just entails you going through many stages of hell, bringing ruin to a lot of demons and doing just lots of cool stuff, but all according to the rhythm of the song that is playing on the stage. So the main hook of Metta Hellsinger is that you need to essentially just shoot in time with the beat of the track that is playing. And depending on how well you do that, you will build up a, you know, a multiplier. And in building up this multiplier, the music actually ramps up, which is very cool. So if you start out a stage, it'll be just, you know, let's call it drums, like a drum beat. And you start fighting enemies and shooting. And by the end of your multiplier, you've got, vocals on top of bass and electric guitars. And it's very metal. I mean, it's in the name. It's Metta Hellsinger. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this game surprised me. It's actually really, really fun. I called it, it feels like Doom because really does feel like Doom. I think that it got a lot of inspiration from that game specifically, and you know, that genre of just shooting a lot of things. I think what makes it almost stand out a bit is just the fact that you are trying to keep in time with, you know, the song that is playing, and it's just good fun. Like it makes you become very aware of, you know, the songs that's playing. So if you're watching the footage now, you'll notice there by my crosshair there, those arrows coming in. That's just the beat of, you know, the drum beats. And you're trying to time up everything with that. And when I say everything, I mean not just shooting. Even when you reload a weapon, you're incentivized to reload according to that beat. And, you might be wondering, well, what if I just shoot not according to the beat? The punishment is that you just don't do as much damage. Or if
sometimes you straight up don't attack.
Yeah, like, if you're completely offbeat, you just will not attack.
Yeah.
But if you attack slightly offbeat, if your weapon were to do 100 damage, getting it perfectly on beat will make it do like a significant bump up, like 120 to 150 damage. Mm-hmm. So like you really have to try keeping time with it. And it just makes the whole game feel a lot more cinematic as a result. Like it feels good. it's weird because there's a lot of just chaos and destruction happening, but it almost makes it feel like an opera, if I could call it that, or like a stage performance.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
And it's a lot of fun. It's not a long game. You can breeze through it. And yeah, I really
like you said,
it's
got the replayability, I think, where it's like, Every level, you've got a leaderboard at the end, and the aim is just kind of to do that. So, I've only played the first level, and when I got to the end, your score was higher than mine. I was like, I'm gonna play it again.
Yeah, you must know. But you obviously played it then after I'd started. So did it show me specifically, or did it show you? Like
it showed your name because we're friends on Xbox. Oh, so,
okay. But did it show you globally as well? Like,
oh, yeah. Globally, I was like, fucking, I don't know, 20 or 200,000. Like, I was nowhere. Absolutely nowhere.
But I mean, I think given that we've just played the game and we've learned how, you know, we're still learning how to play it at that point, you could very easily come back and then, you know, I think breeze through a lot of these levels. You'll know when enemies spawn. You'll have... You'll probably find out which weapons work best for you. So I think in total, there's not a lot of weapons in the game. There's maybe 5, 6. I know you get your sword, you get a default skull, which is like, I'll call
yeah,
it
like a
your
simple
pistol,
shoot,
if you want to
yeah.
call it that, yeah.
And you get the shotgun.
Shotgun, dual pistols. It almost feels like a rocket launcher, but it's not. Okay. It's just like an AOE weapon. And you get these... It's very cool. I don't know how to describe them. They're basically like two weapons you throw and they come back.
Oh.
Kind of like boomerangs, but they're not boomerangs. So it's cool because you get to a point where you throw one, you wait a bit, throw the next one, and then by the time you've thrown the next one, your first one's come back. So you get into this very cool rhythm, yeah. So I don't know. What did you find with your first hour of the game?
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So I played a game... Not similar to this, it was more isometric top-down called Sound something. I can't even remember.
That is the beginning of this year, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And that kind of like soured me a lot on the idea because the music never felt appropriate for the sort of action. Like there would be ones where it was way too fast and ones where it was just way too slow. And it just felt like they threw music at... levels without consideration for how it works.
Thinking about it.
This already in the first level, I could tell like it was very well measured. The song choice and the tempo was measured for the sort of action and the encounters that you were given.
Yes.
And it was both precise with how it demanded like accuracy on the beat, but also like it felt right, you know, to me. Mm. So, I mean, they have a calibration tool. I did that and it said that nothing needed to be changed. Yeah. So I was like, okay, cool.
I was like, this is how I know I have a good monitor and audio set.
Exactly. I was like, oh, yeah, it seems things feel fun. But it felt immediately like clicked. And at the same time, like it's a cool hook, but I'm not constantly thinking about it. You know, it's like, no. I can hear the music, I can see the enemies, and I'm in tune with those things. It's not, I have to keep looking at my crosshair.
Yeah,
you know, to see when to keep on beat, you know what I mean?
It's exactly that. I think initially when you start the game, it is like you're trying to not break the muscle memory so much as maybe forming the muscle memory. But if you play any shooter, and I'm going to stick with Doom because that's obviously the closest comparison, you're just running, jumping, and shooting at your heart's content. Like, it doesn't matter when you shoot. So having to be conscious of like, oh no, I need to time it with the beats. It takes like a few minutes, if not just the first level. And then it's second nature. You're just playing and it's quite cool how you just know to click in time with the beat.
It's got really good, I think, audio and visual feedback for when you miss a beat or don't get it perfectly. So you're well aware without having to like stop and take stock of that, which I think is important in a game that is needing to be so fast, you know.
But even like visually, the visual language of the game reinforces it. So if you're watching the footage, you'll notice those explosive crystals, they throb in time with the beat. And some of the enemies, I think most of the enemies actually have glowing parts that, again, like throb in time with the beat.
Yeah.
So it's like these little subtle things that keep you in tune as well, which is very cool.
Yeah. No, it's very well considered. It's very clever. They've taken this idea and really not just like, oh, this is a cool core idea, we can just slap it onto a shooter and that's enough. Mm. It's like, no, there have to be a lot of considerations to make this feel good consistently. So, yeah. But it is very Doom. I mean, if you're watching, you can see the shotgun. It's very reminiscent of Doom. You've got the quick kills, like you press E or Q or whatever. And that like launches you towards them and does like a very quick kill.
It gives you health as well.
Yeah, it gives you health. So, yeah, that's 100% how Doom works. Mm. But it's really good. I can see just on via your gameplay, like you're doing a really good job of mixing up weapons, which I think is required in when you start getting to more complex arenas to keep the score up, because that's ultimately the goal. Like, you want to keep your multiplier up. And the only way to do that is to keep on beat, to keep attacking, to keep killing enemies, you know, and not take damage, because if you take damage, your multiplier goes down. So
yeah,
it's a really fun, really fun mix of mechanics, I think.
Yeah, and I think if you know, people who really get into this game that will replay it will learn that there are some, I suppose like any good game, there are some not explicit mechanics that you will figure out by yourself. Like, I learned that it's actually, so some weapons will insta-kill some of these weak enemies. So for example, these pistols, if I time my shot perfectly, it'll instantly kill those like sort of cannon fodder enemies, which isn't helpful if I need to get health, which means I'd have to switch to another weapon. But, to trigger that opening to push E to like do a finisher. But I also found that when you do a finisher, it actually does a bit of an AOE damage effect, which can be helpful in clearing, you know, if enemies are grouped up. So people who really want to, you know, up their scores and figure that out, well, I think we'll have a good time trying to figure out
you know,
what is the optimal way through a level? What is the best sort of combination of weapons to get me through this?
Yeah. And I guess as you keep replaying levels, you're like, okay, in this combat encounter, there's going to be X number of this enemy and this enemy. I have to go through them in this order because that's the most optimal to keep the score high and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's probably exactly how people are reaching high levels on the leaderboards. So
Yeah.
I will say this probably has one of the most satisfying active reloads I've ever like seen in a game in a long time.
The shotgun one. Oh, is
it's
so good.
It's like if you reload, one of your little arrows on your crosshair turns yellow, and if you press reload again on the beat with that, it does this really satisfying shove in of the shell on the shotgun and click up very quickly. It's very good.
But yeah. I did laugh because I think a lot of these games, one of the most important things about them, it's like an unwritten law, but the shotgun always has to feel good.
Of course.
Like in any shooter, you know, your shooter, a good shooter is measured by how good a shotgun is. You know,
absolutely.
That's like the unwritten law. And I think what made me really appreciate this game is how the shotgun is just so in time with, it's tuned for the game. So like you'll shoot and you'll load the next shell like in time with the beats as well, which is very cool.
It's very good.
It's just super satisfying.
They watched that opening of Doom 2016 and they're like, yeah, we can make a game around this.
I enjoyed it. It was quite a nice surprise to just dive into this game and be served this. I don't want to call it mindless, but it's like just mindless shooting fun. So
it's really good.
Would recommend if you have Game Pass, like no brainer. Definitely give it a trial, see if it clicks for you.
And I think 4 hours is, I know there's been some criticism critically in reviews that it's too short, but at the same time I'm like, this is a very demanding game mentally, like to consistently be on beat. So I think the idea of make it a score attack thing as opposed to a 12-hour campaign, I think if it was like 12 hours, even 8, the novelty of it would have worn off way before then.
By the end of my first playthrough, I was like, that was perfect.
Yeah.
Anymore and I would have been like over it.
Yeah.
So
I think funnily enough, that's part of the problem that Doom Eternal runs into is it's too fucking long.
It's too long.
It's way too long. When you compare it to Doom 2016, it's just, it's too much. By the time you get halfway, you're like, I'm kind of done with this. So.
Over this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's Metal Hellsinger. Definitely would recommend.
Nice. And it's on Game Pass on PC and Xbox.
I think it's probably across. Is it on PlayStation? I don't actually.
Would like out on PlayStation? Yes. Yeah. But I don't think it's on Game Pass. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sure. There's no Game Pass there. So, yeah. Sorry, had to make that clear. cool. So with that, should we move on to, what is it, game releases for the week?
Game releases.
We haven't done this in a fucking while.
It's been 45 years.
So let's look at games from the 1st of October up until, I guess, the 7th.
Just scroll away here.
Oh my god, yeah, I have to scroll all the way down. Okay, up until the 7th. Cool. So we've got Guardian Tales coming to Nintendo Switch October 3rd. The launch of Overwatch 2 free to play. Just the PvP mode, obviously. The PvE is still coming. That is out basically everywhere. I didn't realize it was coming to Switch. Oh.
Yeah, Overwatch 1 was on Switch, but I never thought of Overwatch 2 coming to Switch either.
PC, PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series, and Switch, October 4th.
I'm sure there's cross progression as well.
I think so, yeah. I think that's true. Then we've got 1428, Shadows Over Silesia.
Silesia?
October 4th.
I have no idea.
Lord of Rigel? Rigel?
Rigel.
Steam Early Access, October 4th. The Plague Doctor of Whippera. What is with these names this week? Oh my god. Okay.
Great.
October 5th, PC. Nier Automata, the End of Yore edition coming to Switch, October 6th. That's pretty cool.
Nice.
You've played Nier Automata, hey?
I haven't.
Oh my
god. I know.
You should.
It's up there.
Very good. It's very good. Europa, as in your, like your present, but... Europe,
it's
like
Europa,
Europa,
but Europa.
Europa. Switch, October 6th. Josh Journey, Darkness Totem. I haven't heard of any of these fucking games. Coming to all consoles and PC, October 6th. Medieval Dynasty, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, October 6th. And then the long-awaited launch of No Man's Sky on Nintendo Switch, October 7th.
Curious to see how that runs.
Curious to see how that works, yeah.
Good lord. Well, there you go.
That that Switch fan is just going to send it into orbit.
It's a new mode of transport.
Yes, this is a stacked month. I just keep scrolling and just keeps going. I've got like Scorn, if you're into that. HG Geiger body horror bullshit.
A Plague Uncharted,
Legacy of Thieves collection on PC. A Plague Tale, the newer Plague Tale, very excited for that.
I'm actually playing innocent at the moment. A few hours in.
Yeah, that's what I thought you'd talk about this week. But
I'll talk about it when I've finished it next week.
We've got a Persona 5 Royale coming to Xbox and Switch and PC. Got Mario and Rabbids coming out. We've got Gotham Knights, New Tales from the Borderlands, Bayonetta 3, the DLC for Resident Evil Village.
Snap. That's cool.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Yeah.
It's actually a pretty busy month.
Stacked month. Ooh. Yeah. And those are just like the big marquee.
Then we follow with the biggest launch in November.
Goat Boy Simulator.
I mean, there's that as well. good Lord. Yeah.
Cool. No, there's a lot. November's also just stacked. Oh, my God. I don't want to look at this anymore. This is making it hard for me to focus. oh, my God. Callisto Protocol as well coming in December. Oh, so much. Should we move on to gaming news?
Hold on. When is Crisis Core coming out? That's surely this
November.
Sometime soon, isn't it? Is it November?
Yeah. They announced that as November.
Oh, there we go.
Very keen for that, yeah. Playing that on Switch. If it's coming to PC, by that time I'll have a Steam Deck, so I'll just play it on Steam Deck.
Nice. It's like modern day, you'll be reliving those good PSP days, but on Steam Deck.
On Steam Deck.
Good Lord. Cool. Gaming news.
I think the biggest is easily Stadia. Has to be.
Poor Stadia. RIP.
We hardly knew you. Surprising absolutely no one, except the poor developers at Stadia, which is a whole other thing. Google is shutting down Google Stadia, the cloud gaming service that it started when in 2019. Anyone who's been paying attention to anything to do with Stadia could have seen this coming years ago. It's kind of remarkable that it took this long for Google to kind of like throw in the towel and be like, okay, we've kind of fucked this up. It's not going to work. I do think that the failings of the platform were more a business model thing and not actually the technology.
Not the tech, yeah.
Yeah, I think the tech is very good. And I was reading an article yesterday saying like the tech is here to stay. And I agree with that. I mean, you just have to look at Microsoft's approach to see that. Yeah. Like Xbox Cloud Gaming is going from strength to strength. And again, it's because the model makes sense. It's like all the games you own and all the games on Game Pass, you can stream. And if you buy a game, it's available on your Xbox console or for streaming or for PC in some cases.
Yeah.
Like Google's idea of like, nah, this game exists only on this platform that we can absolutely shut down at any point. Case in point,
yeah.
is like kind of ridiculous, and like it never also, got over that initial hurdle.
Was there a monthly cost to have a Stadia unit?
No.
So it's just that there was
like a tier where you'd get games for free every month, and I think that was like $15 a month or something like that. Yeah. But the games are still full price. It was ridiculous. Mm. Like it made no sense. So, I mean, you know, in 2021, Google insisted that it was still alive and well, and it had deprioritized the customer-facing side of its game streaming platform, having largely shifted its focus to selling the service's underlying technology to third parties. So already then the writing was kind of on the wall there. But this is just another case of good old Phil Harrelson failing upwards. Man was at the helm of Xbox when they did TV, TV, TV. Now at the helm of Stadia when they absolutely shat the bed. I do not know why people keep hiring this dude who clearly does not know what the market
gaming
needs. Like, he clearly understands gaming, he understands technology, but he does not understand what the market is actually wanting at the point in time. Very glad Jade Raymond got out of there when she did. So yeah, that kind of sucks. It sucks for people who really invested into this platform because they were those people. I mean, that is a risk in itself, but it seems that Google is giving back. They granting refunds to anyone who bought anything on Stadia, which must be a colossal cost on them.
I was going to say, I know like Stadia's got its flaws, everything, but I do take my hats off to Google. Not that they have money issues, but I still think it's a very big move of them to be like, we are refunding absolutely everything. Because, you can joke about it. Maybe only 10 people had Stadia and the refund is not that expensive. But assuming there are thousands of people who bought software, to give them their money back is your...
It means they've made no money on this. And, you know, there's been a lot of reports that they spent hundreds of millions to get games on there. Like, they were paying Rockstar hundreds of millions to get, you know, Red Dead Redemption on their platform. Like, they were essentially buying content, and to, like, actually have zero to show for that, like...
Also just goes to show how much money Google has.
Yeah, it's also true. They can just afford to make mistakes like this. Yeah.
This is a sort of move that would end a company.
Oh, yeah. Any other company, this would completely sink them completely.
Yeah.
But this is Google. Google does this all the fucking time. So
yeah.
That's why when Stadia was announced and it was announced as this closed ecosystem, people like, Google's not got a great track record with this. So
no.
What I don't like is that Google didn't inform developers about this. Mike Rose, a publisher at No More Robots, they just put out a game called We Bought a Zoo or Built a Zoo or something. They publish a lot of games. Yeah. And he was like, we were 3 days away from launching a game on Stadia and no one told us this was happening.
That is.
And he's like, will we get our money from Google now for publishing? Probably not. You know,
that is ridiculous.
You know, even developers at Stadia, working on the Stadia team at Google, were told maybe an hour before this announcement was made. So
how does that happen?
It's
though?
Fucking insane. Like, it's actually disgusting, and it happens all the time. Like, so many companies letting employees find out on social media.
It's more thing of like, how can you let something that intentional happen?
No, it's crazy. It's just a complete lack of respect for the people who help you build this product that you just torpedoing into the ground. You know, and it's not their fault. If they're on the tech side or on the business side, they are, you know, working to the mandates of the executives who clearly don't know what the fuck they're doing. So, yeah. There was a report that there was a Death Stranding successor that was planned as an exclusive for Stadia, single player exclusive, that never took off. Hideo Kojima like candid himself like a few years back. But some publishers are making good on this. Like Ubisoft's already announced that they are looking at ways to migrate Stadia purchases over to PC. So if you have a gaming PC and you play it on Stadia, the problem is like that is nice, altruistic, but the whole promise of Stadia was like, you do not need hardware.
You don't need.
So I do not understand there to be a Venn diagram of someone's like, I've got a gaming PC, but I also have all these purchases on Stadia. Like, what the fuck were you doing? Like, what's the point, you know? So, but I guess as a publisher, that's all you can do. It's like, you can't now go and give them console codes because that's a whole royalty problem.
That's,
But PC, you can, you know. I know IO Interactive said the same thing for Hitman. There's players now saying they want their Cyberpunk 2077 save that, you know, given to them so they can migrate that to other platforms, which I don't think should be a problem because I'm pretty sure CD Projekt Red introduced crossplay anyway, like cross-save progression anyway into the game. So
I was going to say, like, as much as I hate having to sign up for every bloody service, well, not every, but like with some games, it is a matter of like, are you a CD Projekt Red member? Are you a Rockstar member? But in cases like this, I'm like, yeah, if it gives me crossplay,
I
mean, crossplay should just be a thing.
For Cyberpunk, it's great because if I'm like, ooh, I don't really want to play at my desk today, I want to play on the couch, I can load up Cyberpunk on PS5. Yes, it doesn't look as good as on PC, but I can just put in 2-3 hours of progress, whatever.
Yeah. This is like that age-old problem I had with Monster Hunter where I played it on Switch and then it launched on PC. I had to start from scratch. But it's 2022. It's
super annoying.
How is this a problem?
Yeah, it's super annoying. Anyways. It's not just standard. So
yeah. But RIP Stadia.
RIP Stadia, it's shutting down in Jan next year and Google expects most of the refunds to be processed by then. So good luck if you are someone in that scenario.
You know, it's quite nice about that though is that if you spent money on Stadia, suddenly you're going to have this little cash injection of like, oh, damn, $500.
Yeah.
That's quite nice.
I can maybe buy a PS5. I can
turn this money into a console now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's not too bad.
In other gaming news, I suppose, what do you want to touch on quickly? Let's...
Should we chat about this quickly?
No, what are you going to say?
I was going to say The Last of Us.
Okay, we'll do The Last of Us. So let's do all the things that you want to do.
Well, I gave you the option.
There we go.
This came out on Monday, I think. Because I think it was The Last of Us Day or whatever that is at Naughty Dog. And we've got a proper...
An actual trailer.
Yeah, like minute and a half trailer for The Last of Us show, which is coming out
really
in 2023.
Good trailer, can I just say?
Oh, my goodness. Holy moly. Absolutely gorgeous trailer. Like,
power trailer.
So much money put into the series. The set design is just incredible.
I was saying to you, having like literally replayed the game a few short weeks ago and now seeing it on the screen, I'm like, oh my. This looks really good.
The clickers look really good.
Oh no, I saw those clickers. They're like, no, please.
Stop.
Please, no.
But it looks like they're capturing the parts of the game that are important. It's the characters. Mm. It's not.
Yes.
The apocalypse is just the kind of backdrop to all this character drama that's happening. So I think the casting choices are like spot on for like everyone. Pedro Pascal looks like he's going to be a phenomenal Joel. Yeah.
I was going to say, just to touch on what you mentioned earlier, that I'm sure that the series will have action, without a doubt. But I don't think it will be like, you know, exclusively, whoa, there's something happening all the time. It's more those like in between moments of, you know.
I think it's going to be very reminiscent of the first few seasons of The Walking Dead, which were very much that, you know. Mm. So
100%.
I'm pretty sure we're going to see loads of comparisons to like, oh, this is what The Walking Dead should have been, you know, something like that.
Probably.
But yeah, very excited for that. There's no firm date on that. It just says 2023.
No, 2023.
Now. But I think the rumors say it's early 2023. So
I think the sooner the better, because I'm almost surprised that they launched The Last of Us Part 1 not with the show.
I think the plan was to do that. And I think it just got to the point where Sony's like, we can't hold on this longer.
Because I think it's still,
if I remember correctly, there were reports last year saying that The Last of Us remake was going to come out like Jan/Feb this year, and it didn't. So,
well, you know, it won't matter, because The Last of Us Part 1 is out in the wild now. Like Cyberpunk 2077, who just launched the anime nearly 2 years after the launch of the game, Cyberpunk is now having a resurgence thanks to the Edgerunners show, which we've both watched. Real good.
Very good. Very good show, yeah.
I think you don't have to be a Cyberpunk fan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm talking specifically, you don't have to be a Cyberpunk game fan, but if you like the genre of Cyberpunk, then 100% watch the show.
It's I haven't finished the game, and I don't think the game's still that good, but the show is pretty great. Pretty good.
The comparison I'm getting at you is that how Edgerunners gave Cyberpunk this new lease on, well, not new lease, but like gave it this resurgence. I'm pretty sure that when The Last of Us show launches, people are going to be like, oh, hey, there's The Last of Us Part 1 game.
100%. this is all what multimedia strategies are. Like, this is entirely what you do. Like, CD Projekt Red has been very good with this, like very proactive with like the Witcher show. You've got the Witcher and like animated movie. You've got like a prequel coming out. Like their cross pollinated multimedia strategy. Every time a new Witcher season comes out, you see the same stories of like, oh, Witcher sales are just going up.
Onto this, Cyberpunk 2077 has crossed the 20 million copies sold mark, which is
big.
Monumental. Yeah. And it's such an interesting scenario, because like I think I along with many other people have a real love for CD Projekt Red because of like The Witcher. So to see them launch Cyberpunk in the States it did was very sad. Like, it was this awful thing of seeing this company, this beloved company, just having this fall from grace. But I think things have worked out neatly in that Cyberpunk is still selling well, mm-hmm. and I'm hoping they've learned their lesson for their next project, whatever it is, probably Witcher 4. Like, I don't know if it's a matter of just giving that game enough time to be developed or so much as setting expectations. I don't know, but I hope they've learned a hard lesson.
I mean, you'd hope that, especially for the devs who were like worked like crazy. The game came out in a state that they knew wasn't ready and then had to work like crazy to address that, like in the months after. So yeah, I agree with you. I hope they've learned from that for the sake of the developers and us as like consumers. So they definitely are working on a new Witcher. Like, that is their next thing.
Is that fact?
Yeah, okay. They announced that earlier this year and they said they're moving to Unreal Engine 5. They're not working on their own internal,
but
which in a way is maybe going to offset a lot of this. It's like they were maintaining their own engine in studio while building this game. Like, so.
But Cyberpunk's also not done. I think next year they've got another big DLC expansion plan for next gen only as well. So
yeah, Phantom Liberty DLC. So yeah, it's early on next gen and PC. But that is the only DLC that the game is getting, the only expansion at least. So yeah,
but
I think they have bigger plans for it. I mean, they cancelled the multiplayer mode that was meant to come out. So I think they're just like, they're cutting their losses on like, we can't continue to grow this on an engine we are not even going to be supporting for our next games. So
yeah,
you know, we just cauterize the wound here and move on.
Yeah but I'm kind of keen to just dive into Cyberpunk, even not to replay it, but just to walk around that world and see what's changed in the last
this
game came out nearly 2 years ago.
I've been replaying it in drips and drabs because, you know, you finished it at launch, but I fell off of it. I was like so disappointed by it, you know, after like you said, loving The Witcher 3. I just I did not find the things that I really enjoyed from that in here. The world felt very sterile and barren and whatever. And a lot of those things now, replaying them, I don't think have actually changed. You know, the world is still beautiful, but there's still a lot that I have problems with when it comes to like the way the AI reacts and the way combat works out. And but it's still fun. Like, I'm having a better time with it now than I did 2 years ago, and that's pretty good. I'll probably see it to the end now. But it is a beautiful world, like, especially on, I saw one of the guys from Digital Foundry saying it's the only game he's played that you can definitely tell was built for powerful hardware first and then scaled back for consoles, and not the other way around. Because this game on PC just looks unbelievable. Really like something else. So yeah, it's a real look up.
Well, on that theme of games that should have been delayed, games that continue to be delayed, Skull and Bones, this game that was announced delayed so many years ago.
Originally revealed in 2017 and in development since 2013.
It was, it had a resurgence of like, okay, this game's coming out, and it has been delayed again to March 2023. But now,
it was meant to come out in November, wasn't it?
I think it was soon, yeah.
Yeah.
Expect it to arrive in November this year. But now this is an interesting conversation because we've just said, like, you know, maybe CD Projekt Red should have delayed their game indefinitely until they're ready. But now, do we criticize these people?
Definitely not. Like, if they need more time, they need more time. I think Skull and Bones has just become a bit of a laughing stock because it's like, it's so typical that this game got delayed. And it's so clear that this is a concept that probably should have just been canned like years ago. Like, it's taken so many years to try and find a way for it to work. And even then, when it was shown off like a few months back, it doesn't look good. Like, the gameplay doesn't look exciting.
I think there's I think there's some good ideas, but I can't tell you it gets me excited.
No, not at all.
So I don't know.
So yeah, I don't know. Like, people laugh at it for being delayed, and I agree with you. There is hypocrisy there where it's like developers should just delay games and take time, and yet we are here like laughing at a game being delayed for like the fifth or sixth time. But
yeah.
But Skull and Bones just seems like a game that's for no one. I just don't see this game like actually selling well. And it seems to be based on prior reporting that the only reason it's coming out is because of an agreement, I think, with the French government, because they probably put money in. I don't know if it's the French government. It was one of the governments. And so they have an obligation to actually put this game out. And sure. I think that's really the only reason Ubisoft hasn't torpedoed it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's coming out in March now. Maybe. Who the fuck knows, really?
In reverse cadence news, Disney reportedly wants 2 Star Wars games per year.
This is insanity.
That's, oh, sorry.
This is actual insanity, I think, on the side of Disney. So this is being reported by, well, GameSpot, but originally by Insider Gaming, which is Tom Henderson's new, like, it's new website where everyone, all the writers are anonymous, and it just seems like a place where people can just break embargoes willy-nilly. So who knows?
Nice.
So yeah, the publisher apparently wants to put out 2 Star Wars games every year, consisting of 1 big AAA game and 1 smaller game every fiscal year. This includes several games that have already been announced. So apparently Lucasfilm is on board for the plan as well. So we've already got like Star Wars Jedi Survivor from Respawn and Star Wars Eclipse from Quantic Dream, kind of in the AAA space there. Yeah. You've got a smaller competitive shooter called Star Wars Hunters coming, and an untitled games from Skydance Media, Respawn, and Ubisoft. The game from Skydance was long rumored as Amy Hennig's next project, but I think she's working on that Captain America Black Panther thing now, so I don't know how much of that is true.
This is, yeah.
But that just means there's lots of AAA games, Star Wars AAA games in dev that we don't even know about, so.
Yeah.
Insider Gaming also reports several more in pre-development. It's a lot of Star Wars.
I love Star Wars. Big Star Wars fan, but even I'm like, it's just too much. There's just, I don't know, and I don't think I'm alone in saying that it feels like there's just too much Star Wars happening.
It's too much, I agree.
It's so difficult to keep up now, even with, so like we had, you know, the OG trilogy, the prequel trilogy, and then now starting with the modern trilogy, it feels, and obviously there's in-between stuff, like there's been Clone Wars and between that. But it feels like in the last 5 years they've really just ramped up Star Wars. There's just too much.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's like mainstream movies, there's a lot of spin-off shows, there's a lot of games, and like
it's the same thing as Marvel. Cool, it's saturation. It's just
too much saturation. Yeah. And like
the good thing is that they seem to be, at least on the TV front of it, they seem to be hitting a good quality bar now where I feel like, you know, the 3 sequel movies were, I enjoyed them for what they were. But I don't think about them that much anymore.
No.
And, you know, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, fun, you know, it was fun. It had its moments that were like, okay, this is fucking great. But on the overall, it's still like, it's okay, you know.
Yeah.
Stuff like Andor now is getting such big critical acclaim. So I wonder if they're just like, finally like, okay, this is what modern Star Wars audiences want or something like that. And maybe the games will do that as well.
But am I alone in wanting something that's just outside of this whole Skywalker?
Oh, absolutely. You series. Are not like, alone there. You at like, least when you're talking to me, yeah.
It's like I was saying in the office recently that remember when you watch Rogue One and at the end of Rogue One Darth Vader pops up and it's like, oh my god, like you kind of hope for it, but the fact that it happened, like, shit, this is awesome. But I'm like, okay, well, obviously Darth Vader pops up in Obi-Wan. Is he going to pop up in Andor? Like, that magic is, like, I get it. Darth Vader is a big bad villain, but like, you've played that card. Can you just stop playing it?
No, I 100% agree with you. Like, this is why Obi-Wan, as a concept for a single season, to me worked.
Yes, because I was like, please do not make a second season.
The thing is, they might. Like, there's already things going around being like, oh yeah, they might just do another season over here. And I'm like, why? Like,
no,
it ended off so well. Like, it, you know, it gave us the sort of like conclusion to Anakin and Vader, Anakin, Vader and Obi-Wan, you know. So, but that's the problem, is they don't know when to stop and they just keep saturating the same sort of period. In a way, that's sort of like why Clone Wars is pretty cool, because even though it was still contained within that period, it was so different. They visited all these different planets and introduced all these different characters that you never ever see anywhere else, and that's what made it feel fresh. So,
but maybe that's why Andor's also getting some critical acclaim, because it's just different, I guess.
I don't know. I would like the new games to be set in completely different spaces. Like if Respawn makes a Star Wars shooter that is just like Clone Troopers, I'm going to be like, for fuck's sake, like, why? Why do we need
this? So only period in Star Wars where people shot at each other.
The thing that annoys me the most is, like, Quantic Dream is doing, well, out of the games that have been announced, Quantic Dream is doing the one game that actually sounds super interesting because it's set during the High Republic, which is thousands of years before the films.
Years before.
But it's Quantic Dream, so I'm like, for fuck's sake, why? Why are you guys doing the one thing that actually sounds like it could be cool, you know?
Damn it.
I'm keen for Jedi's Survivor, though.
Like, look, all that said, I loved Respawn's Jedi Fallen Order.
Yes, I love that game. I replayed it this year.
But again, what does the sequel look like? Does Cal relearn his ability?
That's actually crazy. I forgot that it was announced with the, well, it doesn't have a release date, but it is set to launch before April next year.
Oh shit. Well, there you go.
That's like soon.
That's super soon.
Yeah. Keen on cool. that.
Cool. Other dribs and drabs of quick news. Vampire Survivors 1.0 launches on October 20th.
Sick. So, have you purchased Vampire Survivors yet?
Not yet, but I know Jeff and Darren say this is crack cocaine. I know Nicholas launched played it this week. He's like, it's literally crack cocaine.
I think it's 30 Rand on Steam before it goes 1.0.
Super cheap.
So yeah, it's very good. If you're unfamiliar with what it is, it's like, what if Castlevania was an idle game almost? So you kind of are a vampire hunter and you don't initiate your own attacks. You kind of just move around and as you kill enemies, you level up and you unlock new abilities. And just the way these abilities like meld together to create this cacophony of just death and pixels on screen.
Oh my God,
it's super satisfying. It's very satisfying. So
that's cool.
Yeah, give it a go. It's fucking $30 on Steam. Like, come on. Yeah,
it's like a coffee, man.
Literally nowadays, yes.
We got a trailer for a new game called Wild Hearts, which, for all intents and purposes, is EA's straight up take on the Monster Hunter,
developed by Koei Tecmo, the Warriors team, so the makers of, you know, like Hyrule Warriors. All the Musou games. So interesting because they clearly know combat in a certain way. But Monster Hunter combat to me is very different. So what I loved about this trailer were the complete nonsense contraptions that you can build. Like, it just looks so ridiculous and fun.
I must say, if you want to enter the genre, I'm glad that they are doing it with, you know, there's a spin or a twist there. It's not just you being like this legendary warrior who uses a katana or whatever. It's no, you are that, but also there's some weird technology here which lets you do things. So
very, very cool. I'm liking the look of it, I think.
Yeah, I was gonna say it looks gorgeous. Like visually I'm like, damn, it looks really nice.
Yeah.
But I do have my reservations, and this is how I feel with a lot of games you try to mimic or, you know, follow suits in the part of the steps of, you know, more successful game. So a good example is people have tried to replicate From Software's formula with Dark Souls and Bloodborne, and they'll get the system right. You know, it's the thing of, oh, you get experience points and you have to put them into one of eight stats and whatever, but they just never feel the same.
Yeah.
The combat never feels as satisfying. Exploration's never quite that same level of wow, I can't be part of this, folds onto each other. So like, I'm willing to give this game a shot, but I know that Monster Hunter is like the benchmark of, this is, you're fighting this big monster and it feels good to dodge and land combos. Mm. And so we'll see, I guess, when it launches. I hope the combat is as good as it looks.
I agree with you 100%. I do feel as though a lot of the From Software clones that we've had are usually from developers with much, much smaller budgets and developers that aren't familiar with that sort of style or just they don't have, you know, a bunch of games behind them. So I think if someone's going to at least tackle Monster Hunter, Koei Tecmo probably is one of the better choices to, like, maybe you can pull this off, you know?
The game's out soon, by the way.
February 17th. Yeah, it's very soon. I'm keen to give it a go. And I hope it's good, because having like an alternative to Monster Hunter would be nice, because they come out so infrequently. So, yeah.
And then in last piece of news, the next Need for Speed will reportedly be revealed very soon.
Yeah, apparently it is still meant to be EA's big holiday release, despite having no reveal yet. According to Eurogamer, citing Insider Gaming again, it will be revealed within the next 2 weeks, set to be released on 2nd of December, and will allegedly incorporate anime elements.
So I'm only laughing, not because I hate anime, just because it's just funny that that's... what does that mean?
It's only going to be available on current-gen consoles. Interesting. Huh. It's probably going to look good.
I think
I'm down for anime Need for Speed. I'm in.
Going into next year, we are definitely going to see less titles supporting last-gen stuff. But yeah, what does it mean? It's going to have anime elements. So am I expecting some nonsense... the Fast and Furious levels of bullshit where
fucking so keen.
Cars are so neck and neck until the driver's like, I have this nice button.
Let the whole game be cel shaded like the anime skins in Fortnite.
Yeah, maybe visually. But are we going to have the trope of...
Will my car turn into a robot?
No, these two people are neck and neck, and then the protagonist is like, maybe I should shift gear, and they shift gear and they just launch forward. I'm like, what have you been doing
and
this
you see
time?
You see those like black and white speed lines just like poof, like all over how the bed.
What have you been doing this whole time?
And then the opponent is so shocked at your speed that his nose like, bleeds. Whoa. Like,
so I'm there for this anime. But what does it look like is all I want to know.
Yeah, keen to
but yeah, I guess we'll see soon enough.
Yeah,
but
pretty soon, I'm sure.
That's news.
That is gaming news. That means we're moving on to questions. If you want to send us a question, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on social media at Checkpoint Chat on Instagram and Twitter. What is on the agenda for today, Matthew Figuera?
Just double check. Yeah, we've got nothing on Twitter, nothing on email, nothing on Facebook. What do we do?
We peaked at 200.
no more questions. Where? We did peak on 200, and we have a question from Lenska, my wife.
Nepotism at its finest.
It's the best. So she asks, what's significant? Well done. 200 episodes is momentous. What significant plans have you got for the next 200? I mean, I want to sit down and say like, yeah, you know, we've hit 200 now. We're launching a Patreon. You can support us there.
That would be great. Jesus.
We're building our own studio. We've got big plans, but the biggest upgrade we've had thus far is that I figured out that I can put images in the video version of the podcast.
That's going to carry us for the next 100 episodes.
So there you go. We've got Nemesis this week. What will it be next week? I don't know. You have to tune in.
Oh my God. Yeah, I don't know. I think, like we said last week, we do this as a fun thing and not as a job, so we don't have to worry about Patreon and you know, getting an income to keep the podcast going. I don't rule that out ever, but listen, if we launched a Patreon now, like, I straight up do not think we'd even reach $100. So, like, and I don't care about that. So.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. And then with that comes an expectation for a certain, you know, if we miss a weekend, then it's like, oh God, we're not delivering to the people who are actually paying for Patreon. So it's just like a bit more stress than
we I think I will say that my biggest wish for the next 100 episodes is just to grow our YouTube.
That would be great. Channel. Yeah.
And it's like, I've really put in a lot more effort into making sure we have like what I hope is nice looking thumbnails, good descriptions.
No, I definitely think you've upped your game there. Like, it's been incredible.
Because it's not like a huge time investment, but it's just those few extra minutes of like making sure that everything looks good. And like, we've grown to, I think we're on 166 subscribers now, which is again like a drop in the ocean, whatever. And I think it will keep growing, but I've started noticing that we are getting like on average more views, which is quite cool. So I'm hoping, you know, that just carries on growing exponentially.
But I mean, already that is a pretty significant and consistent growth, because like, When we only really started focusing on YouTube when the pandemic hit. After the pandemic hit, we were like, oh, well, we need to do video, you know what I mean? And at that time, I think we were like so far away from even 100 subscribers, so we couldn't get a custom URL. And now, like, we're much further than that. So, you know, it's pretty cool. Considering we put out videos once a week, you know, and YouTube's algorithm is like, this is bullshit. So it's like, we are really fighting against that algorithm. I think it's pretty good. Yeah.
But that's it. That's all the questions this week.
Thank you for the question, Lenska. Appreciate it.
I'll thank her in person later.
If you want to send us questions, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on our social channels at Checkpoint Chat. And that's been episode 201 of Checkpoint Chat. As always, thank you so much, Matthew.
No, thank you. So you hang up.
Thank you, Nemesis. We will, as always, be back next week, and we thank you, as always, for the support and for listening. We'll see you next week. Okay, bye.
Goodbye.